Hi, I'm Dr. Henry Black. I'm an adjunct professor of medicine at the Langone New York University School of Medicine, and I'm here today with my friend and colleague, Dr. Paul Thompson. Paul, welcome.
Henry, thanks for having me, and I'm chief of cardiology at Hartford Hospital in Hartford, Connecticut.
You're my go-to guy about exercise. You're an Olympic level runner. We can go into that at a future date. But what do you advise your patients or the rest of us as to what kind of exercise to do, how much, how often, and so on?
So let me stick with patients. I think there are a couple things that are important. The first thing is to ask patients what they do already. You know, there are some people that think that an exercise history should be part of your vital signs because exercise capacity is one of the big important indicators of someone's overall health. So first of all, as a clinician, ask what patients do for activity so that they know that it's important. And then recommend. And what's the recommendation? The recommendation is 150 minutes per week of moderately vigorous exercise, such things as walking briskly. Moderately vigorous exercise, 150 minutes. Half of that, or 75 minutes per week, if you want to do vigorous exercise like jogging or running. Now, the key point is that doing anything is better than doing nothing. Even simply being in the upright posture, which we may not think about as exercise, but simply standing rather than sitting reduces the risk of cardiovascular disease. So ask about it and then recommend. And what do I recommend? I recommend that patients walk briskly for 30 minutes every single day. Why every single day? Because if you recommend every single day, you're lucky if they get 5 or 6 days per week. Patients will say to me all the time, well, what if it's raining? And I tell them simply to get an umbrella. Because the point of the matter is you want to do something every single day.
Does it matter what kind of exercise? Do you need to work up a sweat? Or do you need to get your heart rate to a certain level?
So it depends on what you're trying to do. Walking, vigorous walking, walking right along, is probably best general recommendation for clinicians to give all patients. Now, why is that? Because most people can walk. Walking and locomotion helps to reduce body weight. You know, if somebody's overweight, one of the most efficient things they can do is to move that extra weight because a heavy person walking a mile does more caloric consumption than a light person walking a mile. So my standard recommendation is that somebody walk. That's probably the best for cardiovascular health. Now, if they're time limited, then something like jogging gives you the same amount of benefit in a shorter period of time. What we know is you get the biggest bang for your buck going from zero to something. Now, the goals really matter. If your goal is to lose weight, then you have to walk a lot of miles to burn up those calories. If your goal is to get in somewhat better cardiovascular shape, then the walking works quite well. If you're going to run races or run marathons or really want to improve your aerobic capacity, then something like jogging or running is more important. So for patients, I think one of the things to do is to check in with somebody who knows a lot about exercise to get specific advice as a patient for you. For clinicians, the overall recommendation is ask about it, tell them to do something about it.
Does it matter if, say, you use a stationary bike or a treadmill or some other machine if you can't go outside, for example?
No, it doesn't. Doing something is better than doing nothing. Now, if you're going to try to lose weight, riding a stationary cycle is not as good as walking. Why? Because when you're riding the stationary cycle, your body weight is supported. I always tell overweight people that walking is a way to take and make lemonade out of their lemon. Why? Because when you walk, you burn more calories if you're heavy. But a stationary bike, great form of exercise. Now, you just can't cycle a thing. You got to push it. If you're riding a stationary bike, you have to either turn up the resistance or turn up the revolutions per minute. Elliptical, great exercise, very low impact on joints, recommended all the time for people with arthritic complaints, especially in the knees and the hips. Walking, however, overall, if you don't have an orthopedic problem, is about the best exercise you can recommend.
It can be outside or on a treadmill or just with an elevation, or does it make any difference?
It does make a little bit of a difference. We recommend that when somebody's walking out, walking outside, you know, that they simply walk. But when you're walking inside on a treadmill, a 1 or 2% grade. Now, why is that? When you walk outside, believe it or not, there's a little bit of air resistance that slows you down a little bit, even though it's imperceptible to you. So when you walk on a treadmill, the same speed doesn't burn the same number of calories. So what you want to do is you want to put in 1 or 2% grade. That kind of mimics air resistance to help with the caloric burn.
So when you pick a program, there are weight loss programs and other things that the modern machines do. Do you have a recommendation as to what that is or how many calories you should burn, say, in a 45-minute session with a treadmill?
So let me make sure you understand this point. It's very hard to lose weight with exercise alone, unless you're like running 10 miles a day and getting in shape for a marathon. It's very hard to lose weight with exercise alone. It's clearly a contributor to the weight loss, but without some caloric restriction, a person rarely loses weight with exercise alone. Now, if you walk for several hours every day, you can do that, but most of us don't have the time. So what's my overall recommendation? My overall recommendation is everybody walk their butt off, so to speak, for weight loss. And then my second recommendation is that if you want more specific advice in terms of how fast your heart rate, other activities, then that's best to check in with a physician who knows something about this, or even one of the exercise specialists. You know, groups like the American College of Sports Medicine have certified exercise trainers, have certified exercise specialists, and they're very useful people to check in with about your specific recommendations.
I see. What do you recommend to a, say, 60-year-old who's fairly healthy, who has no risk factors, who just wants to maintain his or her weight? What's your recommendation for a person like that?
It's the same recommendation, a minimum of 30 minutes every day to have some caloric burn of something like walking. Now, if they want to do something more vigorous, I often suggest that they start by jogging a telephone pole, walking 3 telephone poles. Then, you know, as they get in better shape, jogging 2 telephone poles, walking 4. The question always comes up, do all these people need exercise, stress tests, and all that sort of stuff? The current recommendations from the American Heart Association is that if somebody's going to engage in a vigorous exercise program, that they should see a physician, perhaps for getting something like an exercise stress test. I usually don't recommend it. What I recommend is that people start an exercise program and that they pay attention to themselves. If they have new symptoms that come on during exercise, then they ought to discuss those with a physician. I'm afraid that if we required everybody to undergo an extensive evaluation before they start an exercise program, that would prevent a lot of people from starting an exercise program. And, you know, all the way back to 1802, William Heberden, who described angina, said that he didn't know how to cure it, but he did have one patient that sawed wood for 30 minutes every day and was nearly cured. So 30 minutes of sawing wood, we would recommend walking at the present time. But the fact of the matter is that an exercise program is beneficial for you even if you have occult heart disease.
Any other recommendations for cardiovascular health that are related to what a good cardiologist would tell people, or is it pretty much common sense?
Well, I think most of the stuff with respect to exercise is common sense. Don't ask too much of your body too soon. You'll be amazed at how plastic the amount of adaptability that the human organism has to muscle overload, to exercise overload, but go gradually. You've got to do something to get something is basically the take-home message. Now, the other recommendations is, you know, for clinicians, for example, I make sure that the clinicians that work with me weigh patients every single time. And why should you weigh a patient every single time? Because it's easier to lose 1 pound 50 times than 50 pounds once. So if you see a patient who's going up by a pound a year, it's important to get on them about that before they're up 40 pounds or 20 pounds or 30 pounds, which it's much harder to lose. So an exercise program is very important. Taking and watching people's body weight is a very important thing for clinicians to do. Other activities such as aspirin use, a baby aspirin use. I must admit, the guidelines go back and forth on this, but I've been a real fan of low-dose aspirin use in people at, you know, the 7.5% or 10% risk of cardiovascular disease, as long as they don't have a contraindication. The most important thing, though, I think we all know, is to pick the right parents, correct? I mean, if you pick the right parents, genes make a lot have a lot to do with this.
What about weightlifting or moderate weightlifting? Does that help in any way, or does that just increase muscle mass and make you seem fatter?
No, we're big fans of weightlifting because in our environment, people are living so long that they can outlive their muscle strength. So I routinely recommend that patients have a light weightlifting regimen, doing such things as biceps curls, bent over rowing, a little bent knee sit-up sort of exercise, bent knee push-up sort of exercises. Those sorts of things are probably best described to you by a personal trainer or one of those fitness people that I told you was certified by the American College of Sports Medicine. But what are the exercises I generally recommend? I generally recommend that patients do shoulder shrugs, that they, simply do shoulder shrugs, that they lean over and do bent over rowing, that they do biceps curls, and that they do triceps extensions. They do on their back, on the floor with their knees bent. They simply lift their head and shoulders off the mat. If you lie on the floor with your knees bent and simply lift your head up, you can feel all the muscles in your stomach tighten. So simple exercises like that can be taught very quickly by a clinician or by an exercise expert can really help people maintain their muscle mass. Now, are there cardiovascular benefits from weightlifting? It's been harder to prove that there are cardiovascular benefits from weightlifting than there are from aerobic exercise. So the purpose is not only to, help with cardiovascular health, but more importantly, to maintain your skeletal muscle health. We don't think about this a lot as cardiologists, but the skeletal muscle is actually an endocrine organ. The skeletal muscle secretes all sorts of what we call myokines, cytokines that come out of the muscle. And they signal the liver, they signal other parts of the body. So it's important to stress the skeletal muscle system a little bit every single day.
Paul, I recently got a trainer, as I think you've recommended, and he wants me to do planks. Now, what are planks? What do they do for you? And are they something I should be including every day?
So a plank is simply, most times it's done with you leaning on your elbows, your toes are on the floor, and your body is supported off a floor. It's like the push-up position, but you're on your elbows. Well, planks are excellent exercises for strengthening the core muscles, all those muscles that support your spine, your abdominal muscles. So I think they're a fine exercise to do. A lot of us were doing planks for years when we were doing push-ups. We just didn't call them planks. We called them push-ups. But a plank is kind of a stable push-up that strengthens those central muscles. And, they're very important for people. So, yeah, I think that's a good idea. And, Henry, the idea of getting someone to advise you on an exercise program, if you can afford it, I think makes a lot of sense. But there are inexpensive ways to do it as well. For older people, the senior citizen programs often have exercise programs. The YMCA is a great place to go for those sorts of activities. So getting somebody who's an expert to help you, I think, is very useful.
How long should you do a plank, or as long as you can handle it, or is there a limit to how many minutes or seconds you ought to be doing it?
So I don't know of a limit to something like that. I would think you would start off, if you're in good shape and you're used to doing things like push-ups, then you can go for a very long time. But, I don't have an answer for that, to tell you the absolute truth. I think a minute or so would be fine.
A minute would be good, because that's about what I can handle with that collapsing.
If you can hold it longer.
Any other general recommendations for cardiovascular health? As you say, we're kind of living longer, and we ought to be in good shape as we do.
So I think the most important recommendation for cardiovascular health is to keep moving. Do stuff. Be physically active, whether that be gardening, whether that be stair climbing. Look to incorporate exercise habits into your life. You're up, I work on the seventh floor here. So I routinely will take the seven floors up, the stairs up, seven flights of stairs, rather than taking the elevator. So there are ways to work exercise into your life, even if you're very busy, walking to work, things like that.
I remember my boss, Sam Thier, said that what we really want to do is be like batteries that run at full speed and then stop. It'd be good if we can all do that. Paul, I want to thank you so much for your time and advice. It's always been great advice, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Henry. It's a pleasure to see you again.